Okay, welcome to Behind the Curtain number 3. Yeah, book 3 is officially done. If you're listening to this before you finish listening to the whole story, you should probably go back and finish that first. I'm assuming that folks who've made it this far have listened to all of book 3, so anything I say about the story here won't be spoilers, just references. First off, I want to thank everyone who's come along for another of Teska and Carla's adventures. Your emails and comments have been great, and for those of you who've chosen to make a donation to support this series, well, it really means a lot to me. Your donations have helped. Thank you very much. And as you may have heard, there's a guest in the booth with me today, my daughter Kate, who is 5 months and 2 days old. She doesn't take up much room, which is good because this recording space isn't really built for two, and she'll probably add some more of her comments as we go. And she may decide that she doesn't want to be in here, in which case I'll give her back to Mom, and I'll pick up from there. But let's see how it goes. Now, I brought Kate in here with me to introduce you to the biggest change to my life since I started Book 3. Parenthood changes every aspect of your life in ways both subtle and obvious, and in terms of this series, the big change is how much less disposable time I have available, time that I would otherwise be putting towards writing and recording. When my wife and I learned Kate was on the way, I quickly realized that around the end of 2013, I was going to have a lot less free time on my hands. So from June to September, I steadily ground out as many of Book 3's chapters as my voice could handle, building up a backlog of ready-to-release episodes that I could schedule for weeks in advance. Kate was born in early December, and I really didn't do anything with left hand for that entire month. Then when I resumed recording in January, it took me a little while to get back into the swing of it. All the way through, though, that backlog of episodes I did in advance gave me the buffer I needed. And now here we are, May 7th, and I'm only now just recording the final podcast relating to Book 3. Got it all done just in time. Now, with the end of Book 3's podcast, I can turn my attention towards writing Book 4 and some other projects. I'm aware that as Kate gets older, the amount of time I have available to work on these projects will change, sometimes more, sometimes less. So, when will Book 4 come out? Right now, I have no idea. But you can be sure I'm working on it, where and when I can. And what of these other projects, you ask? Well, I'll get to those in a little bit. But right now, I'm going to answer some of the questions I've received from you since my last Behind the Curtain podcast. Okay, first question. Where do you record? Well, I record in my basement, using a whisper room, which is a portable sound booth. You can visit whisperroom.com to see the sort of spaces the company creates. My booth isn't one of the bigger ones. There's only enough room for a chair, a small table, and the mic stand. My laptop sits outside the booth and is linked via cables to an external monitor, keyboard, and mouse, so I can control everything from inside the booth without the computer's fan noise entering into the recording. For recording software, I use the freeware program Audacity. All right, more than one of you has asked me this. What about a print edition release for Tales of the Left Hand? At the moment, I don't have anything officially in the works, though I've started looking at some self-publishing services, such as CreateSpace. Now that Book 3 is done, I've got more time to look into it, so for those of you who'd like to make some room on your shelves for Teska and Carla in printed form... Oh, you too? You probably just want to eat the pages. Anyway, you guys may get your chance before the year's out. If any news breaks about printed copies of Left Hand, I'll put them up on the series' official Facebook page. Okay, took a quick break there because Kate was demonstrating she just wasn't ready for her podcast debut. So I took her back upstairs to Mom, and we'll get back to the questions. Okay, there are two here from Chris in Seattle. Do you find it straining to have to constantly change vocal registers for the various characters doing recording? I do assume you take breaks, perhaps even every few sentences, but I imagine that you do not record all the Carla parts and then the Teska parts, etc., and then splice them together. Might be easier on the voice, but hell in editing. I record each chapter in one session as often as I can. Basically, I hit record and start reading the text from beginning to end, going all the way through, shifting to different characters as their dialogue comes up. Generally, I'll switch to those voices on the fly, going from one character to another without pause. I don't usually have to take a break when shifting from one character to another. The most common reason I have to pause between characters is a combination of voice and the dialogue I've written. Sometimes that combination sets up an odd switch in mouth sounds that produces a click or a very audible breath. Or if I've done a long monologue in one voice, such as Clegg's, then switching to Carla's voice right away could be a little tricky. Her first few syllables will probably be a little too gruff until I settle into her voice. When those sorts of things come up, I pause, take a drink of water, and redo the line, leaving a gap of space between the two voices that I'll edit out later. I absolutely do not record all the characters' lines separately and edit them in later on. You're right, Chris, that would be hell in editing. But also, I find that doing the characters' voices all at the same time improves the quality of their delivery. I suppose it's similar to a group of musicians playing at the same time or recording their individual parts separately. If I'm reading a scene between Carla and Grievous, for example, the way I say Carla's line affects how I'll say Grievous's line next. The two characters are reacting to each other's words and tone. You know, saying that out loud for the first time makes me sound more like a director working with different voice actors. Oh well, as long as none of them go on strike, I'm okay with that. As for strain, I can usually do about an hour in the booth before my throat starts to really hurt, and that time frame is also heavily affected by which characters are in a particular chapter. Gravelly-voiced characters such as Clegg or Ambrose Fane are murder on my throat, so chapters involving them often take more than one recording session to complete. The hardest voice for me to do, hands down, is Ambrose Fane, partly because his voice is so rough, but really it's because he's so angry all the time. Many of his lines are snarling rants about that bastard Sicarius, so I have to do a lot of retakes with his lines, adjusting the volume and tone of my voice to get his anger across without blowing out my mic. And all those extra takes really leave their mark on my voice when I'm done. Here's Chris's second question. Do you do vocal exercises or warm-ups like professional opera singers do? I should probably do more warm-ups, especially when doing voices like Ambrose, but generally I try to drink lots of water during the day before recording. Drinking water during recording is very soothing, but it's not nearly as effective if you haven't kept yourself hydrated before you get into the booth. The other thing is to speak at a normal volume, whether I'm using an accent or not. Maintaining an even, natural speaking voice is the best way, I've found, to extend the amount of time you can be in front of the mic. Okay, this one is from Dave in Arizona. Do you have any idea of how many Tales of the Left Hand books you are going to do? Do you write story arcs that far out? I have a general sense of where the story is going. However, I'm not going to guess at how many books it will take. Those of you who have listened faithfully will know I originally envisioned everything in books 2 and 3 to be covered in a single book about the same size as book 1, and we can see how that turned out. But this isn't going to be a never-ending story that continues to expand and expand as time goes on. There are several big plot threads that I do intend to bring to a conclusion. Some of these are uncovering mysteries from the past, and some are current events that our characters can't afford to ignore, such as the newly discovered work of the Sabrian scholar Marcellus Drusus. Our heroes still have a lot of work ahead of them. Okay, more than one person has asked me this one. What's your writing process? My writing process generally starts with a stack of index cards. Folks who have joined the official Facebook page for this series have already heard this. In no particular order, I write down every scene or moment I can think of that I'd like to see happen in the book. Then I'll take that stack of cards and start shuffling them into a chronology, just letting my own sense of pacing and continuity dictate the order the cards settle into. This process is organic. The number of cards keeps changing as I write new cards to fill in gaps and discard other ones as I decide that they're not right for the story or shouldn't take place at this time. Some cards go in and out over and over if it's a scene that I really want to have happen, but I can't find the right place for it. I should point out that my idea for this came from something that the author David Gerrold wrote about in his Making of the Trouble with Tribbles. I didn't realize that I'd gotten this from Gerrold's book until I reread it a few years ago and realized that I'd subconsciously picked up the whole process back when I was probably 10 years old and read that book for the first time. I did get to meet David Gerrold a few years ago, and I got to thank him for this process. Because it works great for me. Getting back to the process itself, I've started using some different color cards for different POV characters. So I might write Tesca's scenes with green cards and Carla's with red. So when they're all stacked together, I can quickly see whether one character is getting more screen time than the other. This process goes on until the shuffling of cards slows down and stops. Now I've got a working skeleton for the next book. I know what the characters are doing on the first page and the last, and I've got a progression explaining how they got there. By the way, this also gives me a pretty good sense of where they'll be going in the next book as well, so I have a general idea of what book 5 will be like when I get around to it, but that's for another time. At some point, I type up the cards into a Word document, and if there's any further shuffling to do, it'll happen on screen. Now I start grouping the scenes into chapters, gauging where the logical breaks would appear. The descriptions remain quick. I don't need to write long explanations of each chapter. I just need a sentence or two to give me which direction I'm taking when I start formally writing it. One other aspect of all this preparation is writing longhand in notebooks, and this is where I flesh out more of the world and explore some of the bigger ideas I'm developing in the series. Here's an example of how this worked in Book 3. I wanted to really explore the triad faith in this book, so I spent a good deal of time writing down all my thoughts on what I wanted this faith to be, how the three priesthoods interacted with each other, and where the sources of potential conflict would be found. Almost none of what I actually wrote appeared in the pages of Book 3. That wasn't the intention. But when the time came to write scenes where the abbot and Kelisandra argue with each other, I already knew where each of them was coming from, and that helped shape the dynamic between them. So their dialogue required very little rewriting. I'd already done my homework. And what about these other projects? Well, I already talked a little about setting up printed versions of the novels, but the other thing I'm getting more and more interested in is 3D printing. For my wife's birthday, I used a service called Shapeways.com to take a 2D design I created for a pendant, using the same butterfly shapes I painted on the walls of Kate's nursery last fall. Shapeways added a third dimension to the design, giving it thickness, and then printed it in wax. Then they used the wax to cast that shape in silver. So my wife got a unique present, specifically designed for her. And doing that once gave me the incentive to make more stuff. There are a few physical items I've described in the series, such as Tesca's silver left-hand pin, or the Tactus Arus badge that Captain Grievous received. And it's one thing to describe them in a book, but it's another to hold them in your hand or pin them to your jacket. So I'm going to start playing around with some 3D design software and see what I come up with. And if I get those pieces completed, there's Allie Fane's ruby jewelry, and the red and green magic pendants that were so important in Book 1, and perhaps, one day, I might even design a Sabrian argument and retort. So, maybe somewhere down the line there'll be some new swag available on the website. Stuff you can wear that's not just a t-shirt. That's it for questions. Next on my list... I have one follow-up to my casting suggestions that I offered in the last Behind the Curtain. Listener Kevin Bondurant, I'm sorry, Kevin, I'm not sure how to pronounce your name, thinks that the actor Peter Mensah would make an excellent Captain Grievous. Mr. Mensah was a regular on the TV series Spartacus, which, unfortunately, I haven't seen, but after seeing his picture, I realized he's in the beginning of the movie 300, as the poor Persian messenger that gets kicked into the pit by Leonidas. This is madness! That guy. Kevin, you're right. He'd make a great Grievous. If you've got any casting suggestions in case someone ever turns Tales of the Left Hand into a movie or TV show, please share them. You could send me an email at john@voicejm.com or come on over to the official Facebook page and post your suggestions there. One other thing I hope to get back into now that Kate's arrived and Book 3 is done is just getting out of the house more, specifically attending more conventions, either sitting on panels as a guest or just as a regular visitor. For those listeners in the Mid-Atlantic, I'll be visiting Balticon on the Sunday of Memorial Day weekend, so if anyone's interested in doing a meetup, let me know. Post it on Facebook, and maybe we can throw something together. You can also contact me, as I said, via email at john@voicejm.com or through my Twitter handle, @Votishal, spelled V-O-T-I-S-H-A-L. I will admit I don't use Twitter all that much right now, just posting notifications when each of these chapters has come out, but I'm trying to get the hang of it. Well, I think that about wraps it up here. I want to thank my loyal beta readers for their invaluable help in looking at Book 3 with fresh sets of eyes for me. You guys made this book better. And don't go anywhere. I've got a synopsis of Book 4 for you to look over soon. And once again, my thanks to all of you for joining me on this adventure. I totaled up the running time of all three books, and it comes to over 46 hours. So, if you've got any friends out there complaining about how boring their job is, tell them you've got a way for them to make at least one work week go by a little faster. Finally, my greatest thanks, as always, are to my wife Sarah, who's never minded me going off to Starbucks to write, as long as I bring back coffee for her, and now, to Catherine Grace, who was sitting here in the booth with me at the start of this. Maybe, Kate, someday you'll listen to these stories your dad read and get ideas for stories of your own, and you and I can fight over who gets to use the booth next. Well, until next time, folks, take care.